Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. In each episode, we bring you stories, advice, and insights from experts and seasoned couples to help guide you in your journey, whether you're dating, engaged, or newly married. Hello, everyone. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Kevin Pesek. Kevin is the director of RCIA and marriage prep at St. Mary's Catholic Center in College Station, Texas. Kevin, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Always happy to talk about, now it's OCIA now.
Again, oh, that's right. Oh my gosh.
I wore a rubber band for a while and I just snapped myself every time I said it. And that's a good trick. So yeah, I'm in charge of OCIA and marriage prep. Here at St. Mary's down in Texas. But yeah, happy to be talking to you.
That's great. So tell me, how did you get into this work? What started you out, you know, at St. Mary's? Tell me about the journey. How'd you get here?
So St. Mary's serves Texas A&M University here in College Station. So I was a student here at A&M for 4 years. Really fell in love with my faith here, got really involved in all of our ministries, interned here as a senior in college. And then after graduation, when I got my master's in theology and came back to St. Mary's in 2013 as a campus minister. So I've been here at St. Mary's for a long time, about to start my 12th year, I think. And yeah, I've been doing OCIA for 8 or 9 years now. Wow. And been helping with marriage prep for, I guess, about 6 or 7. Kind of weird how those kind of add up over time. But yeah, kind of in charge of sacramental formation here on staff for all of our college students.
Very cool. That's awesome. And I bet it helps that you've been through like the Aggie experience. You know what it's like to be in their shoes. So
yeah, the football team really has always been bad. So I know how to deal with that. So.
Yeah, totally. I went to school in Dallas. So we had some overlap with A&M fans and you guys are very passionate about your sports.
That's a nice way to say it. Thank you. I'll
of course, got to keep it respectful on here. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask, how does your work with OCIA, and your work with marriage prep kind of overlap? Is there an overlap there? Mm-hmm. What are some similarities you maybe see between people who are wanting to become Catholic and people who are wanting to enter into the sacrament of marriage?
Well, ultimately both of those processes begin with a calling from God, right? Whether God is calling people to become Catholic, calling them to be married. It's his grace that is kind of prompting that decision, right? Prompting that yes. Yeah. And it's always, again, helpful for me to remind people, you know, that marriage is just as much of a sacrament as confirmation is, as Eucharist is, as baptism is, right? These are privileged encounters with the person of Jesus in which he gives us his grace. And that in order to receive those sacraments fruitfully, right, preparation needs to occur. It's actually incredibly fascinating. The Catholic Church released a document a couple of years ago on marriage prep, and it talked about how marriage prep really needs to look very similar to the OCIA process.
Interesting. Right?
The document's actually called the Catechumenal Pathways for Married Life. And a lot of the language they use in marriage prep now is pretty much the exact same it uses for OCIA. This process of conversion, of these steps, these rites within preparation that you have a sponsor. So whether it's a confirmation sponsor or a sponsor couple in marriage, but there's really a lot of overlap, especially in kind of how we do that and how we accompany individuals, how we accompany couples. So it's kind of funny. Sometimes like people double dip and get me for both of those sacraments.
nice.
But ultimately at the end of the day, that the goal would be whether you're preparing for confirmation or you're preparing for marriage, that you are having a deep encounter with the person of Jesus Christ, right? Your heart is being more deeply converted, that you are being sent on mission, that the Lord is equipping you for that. And yeah, necessarily going to be a lot of overlap as you pray and as you kind of work that out.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, that's, I didn't know about that document. I'll have to go read that. Very cool. Yeah, I've thought about this a lot, just interviewing different people and talking about marriage on here quite a bit and going through like being married myself a few years now and going through the marriage prep process. It just seems like there is kind of a different mindset from people getting married and people receiving other sacraments. And I've talked on here before with other people too about like how intense and intentional and purposeful like priestly formation is, for example, and how sometimes marriage prep seems just like kind of a checklist on the way to the wedding. A much shorter discernment. And I think that's why we hit a lot of roadblocks, you know, couples hit a lot of roadblocks early in marriage and later on too. So I think that's great to liken it to the OCIA process. Mm-hmm. That's very cool. So for our listeners who have no idea what marriage prep looks like at all, what is kind of the basic process of it? I'm sure you could say this like in your sleep backwards and forwards, but just tell us like the basics of marriage prep. What does that look like?
So technically it tends to vary from parish to parish, mm-hmm. right? Kind of each diocese, each pastor kind of imposes like their own kind of minimum regulations on kind of what that has to look like. The goal would be that when you get married, right, you have full knowledge and full consent about what you're mm-hmm. doing, right? That you both understand what it means to be married and also understand the person that you are marrying. So generally the process takes at least 6 months. It's kind of the bare minimum to kind of go through all the, like you said, all the boxes you need to check, all the preparation you need to do. So generally about 6 months to a year for most people. But the way it begins, you do a prenuptial questionnaire. So you're going to meet with me or one of the priests on staff here, and we're going to determine if you actually can get married. The easiest way I describe that, it's like when you go to the ER and your arm is clearly broken, you have to have surgery. Mm-hmm. The people in the ER have learned it's not a good idea just to roll you into the surgery and do it. You know, every now and then it's usually okay, but every now and then they cut you open and they hit metal, or you don't stop bleeding, or you're allergic to the medicine. And they're like, maybe we should have asked before we kind of did this major surgery.
Yeah.
And the church is kind of in its wisdom recognized that just because people want to get married doesn't mean that they can or that they're necessarily ready to. Right.
Makes sense.
We do that prenuptial questionnaire almost to kind of save people from themselves, to kind of head things off the past. Like, okay, yes, marriage is good. We definitely want you to do that. But in order to do the surgery, we need to fix this underlying condition first. Okay.
Yeah.
So that could be like a previous marriage. That could be facts about yourself you haven't shared with your partner. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be different for everybody. So I work all with college students. So the vast majority of my college students do not have previous marriages. So I don't have to kind of deal with the whole annulment process and everything like that. But yeah, you know, that first meeting, you're going to do your prenuptial questionnaire. You're going to talk about a timeline, set your date. Where do you want to get married? Is that here? Is that somewhere else? How long is that going to take? And then there's kind of really three other things that you do. And like I said, kind of varies from place to place. Normally you do some sort of compatibility test.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of talks about communications and conflict, finances, sex, kids, family. It isn't pass fail, but it kind of shows you where you're strong as a couple, where you're weak, things you want to work on as part of the marriage prep process. I mean, hypothetically, if you score very, very low on that, it's like, why don't we kind of just push pause on when the whole wedding's going to be? Why don't we push that date back 6 months, or let's see how much we kind of have to work with. But yeah, so you take the test, you meet with me or someone on staff to go through your results to provide, again, the type of premarital counseling.
Mm-hmm.
You normally have to go through some sort of formation process. So for some parishes, it's going to be doing a retreat. Other parishes, it's going to be meeting with a sponsor couple several times. For us, we actually offer a marriage preparation class. So
nice.
It's like a seven-week course where I teach about the theology of marriage. I have married couples come, give witnesses about their marriage. They lead the small groups for all the engaged couples that are going through the class. And that kind of, satisfies that sort of formation requirement, depending on what your parish can offer. And again, the church is going to highly recommend that you have a sponsor couple in some form or fashion. So we kind of meet that requirement with our water. We call our class Water to Wine, kind of based on the marriage feast at Cana. And then usually the last requirement is doing a natural family planning class, right? So learning the basics of NFP, what it is, equipping you to choose a particular method to learn and start practicing before you get married. And there's a lot of boring paperwork stuff after that and planning the ceremony and things. But those are the kind of the three main requirements before you have the wedding ceremony.
That's very helpful for sure. That's I like that you have that class as an option. I think that's a great idea.
It's really great. I'm able to let my sponsor couples be experts on the things that they're experts on. Right. They don't have a master's degree in theology, right? And you don't need a master's degree in theology. But again, I'm able to let them kind of speak into the things that they have experienced doing. So I kind of handle the theology part, and they're able to kind of handle the, well, this is how you deal with kids, and this is what that theology looks like, right? That's really nice that Kevin said it like that, but this is actually how it looks. You know, my wife always jokes with me, you know, theoretically, Kevin is very good at marriage. Right? I know how to be good at marriage. It's a whole other question actually living this stuff out. So it's always nice to kind of provide a practical aspect that our sponsors are able to share.
That's awesome. Very cool. Okay, so some things just popping up while you were talking through all of that. So if a couple is, like, as you said, unfit or unprepared for this, you know, major commitment, what does that process look like for you? Do you say you can't get married in the church, you know, at least here? Do you say, you know, come back in 6 months? Like, what's the protocol there?
So ultimately, the ideal would be the couple would come to that decision in freedom.
Right.
Right, that they would kind of recognize the thing that we want, we are not quite prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
Or the thing that we want is not the thing the Catholic Church is selling us. Right? We kind of see that sometimes. Like, people want to get married in the church, and they don't really understand what that means. And it's like you climb to the top of the high dive, all convinced you want to jump off, and you're like, this is really high.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of part of the goal here, that as we inform their consent, that they understand what it is they are committing to, what it is they are undertaking, right? So ideally, right, if we actually created an atmosphere of discernment, they would feel free of kind of tapping the brakes, you know?
Nice.
I've never told a couple, you cannot get married, we're not going to marry you. I've recommended to some couples, like, I recommend that you wait, that we kind of delay or we kind of push back, right? I can't deny them the sacrament.
Right.
I can delay it, but I can't be like, oh no, you can't get married. Like, I'm not the gatekeeper of the sacraments here.
Yeah.
Right. So I can recommend delay. Like, we need to do some more things, and hopefully they're going to, I'm not going to say that because I got bad vibes and like, I just don't like you. It's like, based on your marital inventory and based on our conversations and, you know, some other things, like, I really feel like this would be the best thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That we're really trying to serve them as best we can. So really hoping that they come to those decisions in freedom is kind of the ideal. Again, as I kind of guide them and kind of nudge them along sometimes.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. And then another question, my team and I were brainstorming about things that that I could talk to you about. And one thing that kept popping up was like a mixed faith couple. Mm-hmm. So only one of them is Catholic and they want to get married in the church. What does that look like for them?
I mean, the process itself is very similar.
Okay.
You know, they're still going to have to go through all the things. They got to do the inventory. They got to do the NFP class. You know, I always joke, you know, NFP, you know, stands for natural family planning. It doesn't stand for not for Protestants.
True.
Again, even explained correctly, like, a lot of people are generally tend to like, oh, I can see why that's beautiful, or I can see why that's a good idea. Still kind of new, but normally people are pretty amenable to that. But if they are mixed faith, again, it's very important that they recognize that my job is not to make them become Catholic.
Yeah.
Right? That they don't have to become Catholic to be married in the Catholic Church. And some people think that, and I'm like, that's not a good reason to become Catholic.
Right.
Right? Nothing wrong with becoming Catholic, but your decision to marry this person is separate from your decision on how you worship the Lord. Right.
Absolutely.
Now, those things might have some intersection. They might have things that kind of overlap, but those are two separate discernments. And really recognizing that if I get somebody into my office that is not Catholic, really kind of recognizing like how that's making them feel, like how comfortable or how awkward they're going to be, but really kind of respecting them, giving space to like, we want you to be honest as you go through this process, right? We want to make sure that this is something you're excited about, that you're on board with, that you understand what it is your partner wants. Right, that you're kind of recognizing, am I signing up for the same race, you know, that they're running? And I feel like usually at the end of the day, that is something they're on the same page about. I think the unique thing about the Catholic Church is kind of our developed theology of marriage that isn't just a human institution, right? It's a vocation. It's a sacrament that as a married couple, you're given a mission from God. And I think that being able to present that in a way that's attractive, that invites them to participate in, that doesn't force them to do that, is usually very well received.
Yeah.
I feel like most people come out of our process being like, I'm really glad I did that.
Nice.
I want to become Catholic, or I don't want to become Catholic, but at least I understand my partner a little bit better. So really kind of trying to keep those discernments separate, like really trying to educate, but really trying to also excite, you know, like I've never looked at marriage like that, and really trying to find some common ground, which is usually able to do so.
Yeah, that's really cool. It makes me think, I know in one diocese, I think it's Lincoln, they, in their marriage prep process, if a couple like comes to them and they're expecting a baby, they actually make them like wait, not get married, like while, you know, the woman is pregnant, and they make them kind of go through all of the steps of marriage prep. And it's not like shaming them for, you know, having that happen at all. It's just like, we still want you to understand everything that you're getting into, and like be in full freedom when you make that decision to get married. And so that, I think that's, yeah, I think that's really great to give people all of the information, as you're saying, and maybe they'll come back to you for OCIA and be in the same office a couple years later or something.
Yeah, it's
so,
kind of funny.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so just touching on relationships in general beyond the marriage prep process, as a marriage prep, you know, counselor, what are the most important values that you believe people should share as they're dating or considering creating a life together?
And I wrote some down here. This was important.
Yeah. it's a big one.
One of the most important ones, I think, is recognizing the permanence of marriage. Right. That the commitment you're making, that this, there is no turning back. Right. I really like the phrase, you know, burn the ships. You know, when they were the colonists came to America, like sometimes they burn the ships, like this is it. There's no going back. There's no exit ramp. Like,
yeah,
marriage is hard. I feel
we're
like
making this work.
Exactly. Like if you feel like you have a parachute on, you can eject from the plane. If things get really bad, you're going to take it.
Yeah.
You're going to take it if it's there, because marriage gets really hard. And I think there needs to be, first and foremost, like, do we believe in divorce? And if divorce is not an option, well, then we're going to figure it out. We're going to make it work.
Yeah.
Right. But if there's any sort of crack in there, like eventually that's going to widen. Eventually it's going to be like, you know, this isn't worth it. So I really think commitment is really important. I think a commitment to personal growth, personal change, right? This recognition of humility, of the way that I do things, right? Might be good, might be bad, but it's guaranteed to be different than the way that my partner does it. And recognizing that my way might not be the best way, that there are, my wife and I always joke, you know, Is this a hill you want to die on? And sometimes, I want to die on that hill. And other days it's like, you know what? I don't need to take that hill. That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you can take it. So kind of having some humility as you enter the process that you are not a perfect person, that you are just as hard to deal with as your spouse is, and kind of that commitment to personal growth in virtue and kind of changing things about yourself that you don't necessarily like. And then patience and understanding with the other person. Right, as they're trying to work to change themselves, that, I don't know, I was envisioning, you know, when the families that we come from, whether they're good or bad, they definitely have an effect on us, right? It's like pushing the wheelbarrow down the path, and there's a big old rut, 18 years long, deep down that path, and it's hard to jump out of that rut. And even when you do, it's really easy to fall back in. And part of marriage prep is kind of recognizing, like, what are the ruts in my partner's life? They might recognize that they're there, but it's going to be really easy for them to fall back into those. I know I see that in myself, the things I want to change, the things that my parents did that I was like, I don't want to do that differently. Usually I end up doing the same things.
Yeah.
Because I'm very comfortable. I know how to do that. And sometimes it's good, praise God. And sometimes it's bad. And those are the things that those are habits I have to work on. And my wife has come to recognize, like, oh, that's why. That's why Kevin does that, you know. It's like, oh, he's an idiot because his dad is an idiot. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of true, right? And again, it doesn't excuse my behavior, but it does help her be a little bit more patient, more compassionate towards me, and even more compassionate towards myself. As I recognize, like, these are some ingrained things that I kind of have to work on and practice to kind of overcome. So, I think entering into marriage, kind of recognizing those three things. So, the permanence of marriage, commitment to personal change, and then patience with your partner. I think it's really
important. I like it. The last thing you said just really stuck with me. That it's so important to learn the context behind this person that you've fallen in love with. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of the students you work with, they might be from out of town or their families are not right close by. So they don't get that context until maybe they're already engaged and they're meeting each mm-hmm. other's families. And I remember that was the case for my husband and I, and everything made sense when I met all his siblings and his parents and saw the way mm-hmm. they interacted. And yeah, it's so important to learn that and then be intentional once you are married of like, these are the things we're going to adopt. These are the things we're going to leave behind. And these are the things we need to work through. So I'm with you on those for sure. Yeah. So this could be like habits or conversations, but what are some things that you think couples should focus on as they're dating that will help them discern, you know, is marriage going to be the next step for us?
Mm-hmm. I think we can draw a lot of similarities here with people discerning religious life.
Mm, yeah.
Right. So like if you're discerning religious life, right, you're not just going to start applying for convents or seminaries, right? You're going on a come and see, right?
True.
You're going to go and see kind of, well, what does this actually look like in this particular community? Right. So mm-hmm. I think some of that is, yeah, visiting each other's families, visiting other families. Like what does the vocation of marriage actually look like? Because again, for a lot of us, you know, that we don't come from perfect families, and some of us families are a little bit more broken than others. And some people really want to have a holy marriage, but they don't really even know what that looks like.
Yeah.
Right. And really kind of like, is that something I actually want? Is it something I feel like I can do? So really kind of educating yourself on what the sacrament of marriage actually is. What is the mission? What is the vocation? What is the church calling me to here? So whether you mm-hmm. had a good example or a bad example, it wasn't a perfect example. And really kind of making sure that, again, if there are any gaps in your understanding of marriage, that you're kind of educated on, oh, I didn't know that that was going to be a thing. I guess that's going to be something I'm going to have to wrap my head around about dragging kids to mass on Sunday. Like, I thought that was just kind of optional. And like, I probably need to take a deep breath and go to mass myself if I'm going to make my kids do this, you know? So
yeah.
I think that's part of it. Let me think, what else did I have here? Let's see. As you're dating someone, discussing potential timelines, being yeah. intentional about where you are walking with together, mm-hmm. you know, of like, all right, we've been dating a year and where are we? You know, are yeah. we any closer to discerning marriage than we were before? You know, what are the questions we've answered? What haven't we answered? What are the milestones coming up, right? Graduation, I'm going to get a job mm-hmm. offer, I'm going to have to move. Like actually having those conversations before those moments actually get here.
Yeah.
Right. Again, we want to respect freedom, right? It's not always helpful to kind of have this clock ticking and like, well, we have to figure it out before this point because I'm going to graduate. I guess we better get engaged. Okay. And it's like... Yeah. Not the best reason to get engaged because you don't know what else to do. So really talking mm-hmm. about timelines, I think is important. And when I talk about timelines, I'm always reminded of trusting in the Lord's timing,
right
on kind of when you should get engaged or not. I know when I was a student and I was dating my wife at the time, and she had graduated a year before me, and she was kind of living her life and was like dropping hints about wanting to get engaged. And I'm like, I'm still in college. I'm still kind of stupid. I'm still, like, you know, doing college things, and you're ready to do adult things. And I'm like, I don't know what I want to do. And I remember talking to a campus minister, and he said, well, do you think it's God's will for you to marry this girl? I'm like, yeah, I do want to marry her. And he's like, well, you can't delay in doing God's will. Right. And that wasn't an ideal situation for a lot of things. Right. Like she had already graduated. She was living somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have a job. I was going to go to grad school. Like there were a lot of things where that timing didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I was 22 years old at that point, you know, and we got married when we were 23. And like, is it more prudent to wait? And that's kind of depends on the individual.
Right.
But if you are convicted of God's will, you kind of trust him to provide. Right. It's not necessarily going to be about when you graduate or what jobs you have lined up or how much money you have saved or if your venue is available, you know, mm-hmm. a year from now. And like, well, we need to wait because it's not available. Like these are not
a good reason. Yeah.
Waiting, right? Like, your priority of discernment is to God's will first and kind of trusting in his timing and that discernment. I think other things to focus on is actually maintaining other friendships, right? I think sometimes we're dating, we're so excited that someone likes me and I like them, and we tend to kind of monopolize all of our time together. And that you become very intimate with this person, but we want to make sure that there are very much a growth in intimacy as you're dating,
right?
That there needs to be a clear, like, when we get engaged, like, again, we should become more intimate. We should be spending more time together, sharing more hopes and dreams and things like that. So I think sometimes people are just so excited to date and they're infatuated with each other, and they kind of just blot out all their other friends and don't spend time with them anymore. And I think it's really important to actually have kind of that outside forum, right? To kind of like keep your relationship in context. So not running away from those. I had a spiritual director in college that recommended, when I was dating my wife, that she said, to practice this thing called absence in the presence and presence in the absence. So that whenever we were apart, right, we would still kind of act as if we were together. We would behave the same way. And if we were together, right, we would kind of like not have to spend every waking moment together.
Right.
So kind of maintaining these kind of like, these emotional kind of boundaries, these intimate boundaries of, well, no, we shouldn't spend as much time together as a married couple.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not married yet.
We shouldn't spend as much time together as an engaged couple. Right. We're not engaged yet. Like really trying to kind of hold back a little bit. Right. So that there can be milestones that we're kind of growing towards, and we're not, you know, going too far too fast.
So I think that makes sense.
Balancing time together and time apart, I think, requires a lot of intentionality, especially when you're dating.
For sure. And I think that's especially true when you go to the same school and they're, you know, your person, it might always be available to you all the time. And it's, you know, you think to yourself, like, why wouldn't I just be with them? That's who I want to be with
their
right
apartment
now.
Is much cleaner than mine.
Right.
I hate my roommates. And,
yep, exactly. Know. Exactly. But I think that's so true. You need to keep, keep your community strong. And that community shouldn't go away once you get married either.
Mm-hmm. You're going to need that community.
Yeah,
right?
You need that.
I'll just
even
tell you
more
right
so.
Now, I'll tell you right now, Gabby, I don't know you very well, but you're a lot to handle. Right? And that's a lot for any one person
to
handle.
Talk to my husband. He's at his wit's end.
you got to share that load with some other people here.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So. And raising kids, and you just want to have a village around you, you know, as you go through life. So totally with you there. So I wanted to ask, I'm sure you see a lot of different struggles on, you know, in individuals at the, you know, St. Mary's Center. College is a difficult time to stay completely on the straight and narrow for a lot of people. What are some challenges that you've seen in Catholic couples or even individuals? And have those struggles changed in your time, in your role over the last several years?
You know, I actually think one of the biggest struggles was a struggle my wife and I had. Kind of envisioning and hoping kind of what we wanted marriage to look like. And thinking it had to look that way. You know, and, you know, that meant, you know, us having a lot of kids and her staying home and taking her kids to Mass and praying the rosary every night and doing all these things, like, yeah, that's one way, right, that your marriage can be holy. But it isn't the only way.
Yeah.
And it ended up not being the way that God was calling us to be holy, but that was something we really had to die to. It was really hard to let go of, right? We realized we were attracted to holiness.
Yeah.
Right. And we thought it had to look a particular way. And I think for some couples, if the timing doesn't work, or they don't have kids as quick as they want, or they don't have the jobs that they want, or they're not living where they want, it's almost like, oh man, we're not as holy as we want to be, or as much as God wants us to be. And it doesn't have to look like that.
Yeah.
Right. Like it might be different than the way your parents did it, than the way your friends are being holy in their marriages. Right. And kind of letting that go.
Yeah.
And kind of trusting that the Lord is going to give me the grace that I need for the situation we find ourselves in. I think that's a big struggle. I think that's always been there. totally. kind of comparing or measuring your marriage to whomever and thinking if it doesn't look like that, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Right. Or we're not doing what God wants. So that's kind of, that's a big one. I think a challenge, it's kind of what I said earlier, is like timing. You know, it's funny. We prepare, you know, about 60 couples per marriage a year.
Wow.
Here at St. Mary's. And the fascinating thing is, Gabby, is that in order to do marriage prep at St. Mary's, one of the people has to be a current student.
Okay.
Right.
Wow.
So these are all like 22, 23, 24 year olds that we're preparing for marriage, right? Mm-hmm. And our culture, I'm sure, looks at that and it's like, they're pretty
young,
man. Are you
serious?
If anything, if the marriage age is getting pushed back and back and back, you know, people are waiting longer and longer to get married. And I think there's a lot of pressure there.
Totally.
From our culture, from families, from friends that are kind of like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You're getting married? Like you're still in college. You don't even have a job yet. You don't even know what you want. And I think that that's something that people really have to navigate. And I don't know, it's kind of discouraging sometimes. You know, I think for at least a lot of the couples I work with here, right, they've come to college and they've had an encounter with Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. That they've been changed. They've been converted, right? That they know who they are, right? The Lord has told them who they are. You are my beloved son. You are my beloved daughter. And once you're convicted of that identity, you're ready for mission.
Yeah.
You're ready to be sent, right? And I think for our world at large, and even just for America, right, so many people don't have an awareness of who they are. Right. They don't know.
So
and
true.
Then they spend their time in college and their time after college trying to figure out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense that they're waiting to get married, because if they don't know who they are, they can't give themselves away.
Yeah.
And I think it's a struggle for our students here that are, again, encountering the Lord, are recognizing their identity. And they can't communicate to someone else like why they're ready. And it's like, well, mom and dad, you waited so long because you didn't know who you were for so long.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there's a lot of pressure on our students to kind of like, the decision to get married is not a practical one. The decision to get married is a spiritual one, right? It's a vocational decision, right? And kind of trusting that the Lord is going to provide if he's going to call me to this. So I think for our students, there's a lot of pressure there of kind of like, again, the feeling like they might be like irresponsible, or they might be like, are we stupid for doing this?
Yeah.
Like, are we too young? And it's like, the Lord is going to call you whenever he calls you, right? It's just a question of saying yes. But I think that pressure is also an issue. I think those are the two kind of big things that I think challenges that couples face that, haven't really changed.
Yeah.
Ever since I've been
a age old struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm laughing because this was my husband and my exact situation. We were 22 when we got married. I was still in my senior year when we got married.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, we got married in November and I graduated in December. So it wasn't that much time, but, even all of our friends who were devout Catholics were like, wait, what? Why are you doing this, you know, so fast? But we had been together 2 years. Like we knew we were going to get married, and it really was a spiritual decision. And then, we got pregnant pretty quick out the gate, and people were like, wow, you didn't wait at all. And we were like, we knew it wasn't God's will for us to wait. Like I've never had more peace about any decision ever. But it is so hard in our culture where you have to have all your ducks in a line. You have to have, you know, this much money in your bank account. You have to be 32, or which it's, there's nothing wrong with being 32 and getting married, but it's the pressure that young,
it's not your timing. It's God's timing.
Right. Right. Exactly. So for anyone out there who's feeling that, you're okay. Go with God. You know, God's got
trust Him to provide. Right? That's why marriage is a sacrament. It gives grace.
It's so much grace.
Right.
Never understood that until going through it. I'm sure you feel the same way. Okay. So advice for, we've talked a lot about couples, But advice for a single person who's listening right now, who's knows they want to get married, they're in the season of singlehood, as we were talking about before.
Persons currently experiencing singleness.
Yeah, right. That's the phraseology.
The softest way to say that, yeah.
I love it. So what can they do in that stage to prepare to be a good spouse and just to be a good Christian and a good individual?
I think part of it is saying yes to dating, right?
Okay,
actually
yeah.
kind of like, well, I don't know. That's probably not them. Like, say yes to dating, right? It's a come and see. That's all it is. No commitments are being made.
One
right?
date.
That's it. Just one date. You're right. So I just say yes to dating, that your discernment requires action, right?
That's
I'm actually trying
true.
To date, you know, am I putting myself out there? You know, whatever. Am I being social? Am I trying to meet people, right? Am I giving the Lord a lot of material to work with?
Right.
You know, am I open to that? So that's the first one. The other advice is to not wait to love, right? We all have this God-given vocation to love, right, as human beings, and to not feel like I can't love until I get married.
Yeah.
Right? That it, again, reducing myself to that particular vocation. So that means, I think, living a life of service, right? A service in love to others, which, by the way, that's what marriage is. Right, a life lived in service to others. So actually doing that now. So whether that means volunteering at your church, that you're the one that volunteers to go on the summer trip with youth group kids, or you teach a CCD class, you teach a Sunday school class for First Communion kids.
Yeah.
If you're the fun aunt, you're the fun uncle, for your siblings, right? Like, yeah,
right.
I'll take the kids for the weekend. I'll take them to Six Flags. I'll take them to the amusement park. Like, yeah, leave them with me. I can do that. Right. Really practicing. Right, those virtues, seeing like kind of what marriage would be like. And I think the last one is like befriending families.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I know we had a girl who lived with us for a year as a nanny when she was a student, and she is currently not married, but every year, like, Christmas gift to my kids is she takes them to Six Flags up in Dallas.
Oh man,
you know,
that's so awesome.
Takes three of my kids, and like, even yesterday, they were still talking about it. It had been like a month, like, oh my God, this roller coaster is the best thing ever. And, you know, and they were,
cool
it was
that?
Like, what a gift for her to be able to kind of, to love.
Yeah.
To love them, to love my wife and I in that way.
That's
to not
beautiful.
Wait to do that, right? That the Lord is not calling you just to suffer until you get married, right? But really trying to figure out how the Lord is, again, can allow you to love even in your own state in life.
Right.
And then again, I think the advice you usually get is, you know, in this time of solitude, in this time of, you know, of loneliness, perhaps with the Lord, that there's a communion there, right? This time spent with the Lord in the desert, that to get to know Him, right? To trust that, Lord, You are the one that will fulfill me. You are the one that will sustain the desires of my heart, right? Even if I do get married, even if I don't, that You are the one that's going to fulfill all those. And to try to remind yourself of that. That ultimately is kind of where the Lord is going to give you the most grace, right? And that's just not after you get married. That's now and for every day for the rest of your life. So trying to kind of keep the main thing the main thing.
That makes sense. And to that point too, like with the example of your nanny, that sounds like such a joyful way for her to live, you know? Like she's sharing these beautiful experiences and memories with your kids. And that's bringing her happiness, and that's probably not why she's doing it. She's doing it to love and be selfless, but it brings her so much joy as well. And so I think a lot of people who are single kind of find themselves in this rut of like, every day is a slog and it's hard and like, I'm really sad and I can't see people because I'm sad, but getting out of yourself, outside of yourself, and giving and serving, like you said, brings you so much joy and makes you a more attractive person, honestly, to other people. So
it's very isolating, right? The devil loves to get you by yourself, start whispering in your ear. Again, it kind of, you see, sometimes it leads to selfishness, right? Well, it's all about me, all about my happiness, all about what I want, all about what God hasn't given me. And instead of, again, how can I give?
Right.
Right. That you do have something to offer, and to not think it's just limited to the vocation of marriage at this point in your life.
For sure. Okay. Just a few more questions for you before we wrap up. what is something that couples need to be talking about that they're not talking about before getting married?
Man, I think that they have to allow for the possibility of their partner changing their minds. You know, of the things that they've talked about, how many kids they want, who's going to work, who's going to stay home, where are we going to live, what our relationship's going to look like with our families. Like, you have to allow your partner the ability to change their mind, right? Yeah. They've never been married before. They've never had kids before. They've never navigated these situations, right? They might think they know what they want. They might think that I want to stay home, and then they have a kid and it's like,
I'm going crazy.
I can't, you know, I'm going crazy, or we're going broke.
Right. You know, exactly. And like,
again, I think that there has to be some flexibility there. You know, it's for good to kind of share dreams and ideas, but also that might not be the Lord's plan for you. That might not be in the cards. Yeah. Right. I've been saying recently, you know, like sometimes in marriage, it's going to be hard, right? Sometimes you get to choose your hard and sometimes you don't.
Right.
No matter what, it's going to be hard. Sometimes you can choose whether you want to work or you want to stay home. Both those things have their challenges. Right. And sometimes it's chosen for you. You know, like, I have to work.
Yep.
You know,
or that's where we are right now.
That's what it has to be. And that wasn't our ideal or what we think is what we were hoping for. But the Lord does give us grace in that.
Right.
You know, and I think that to kind of just let go with something that we hold on so tightly to what we think it has to look like, that we kind of miss the graces and miss the gifts that are available in these other things. So sure. I think that's part of it. It's kind of letting go of your expectations sometimes. And really kind of recognizing, you know, what is it that God is asking of us?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is he asking us to stay home? Right? Or do we really want that?
Yeah.
You know, or is that something we're kind of imposing on ourselves? You know, like...
Right.
I don't know, really trying to recognizing that he is the one that kind of needs to be involved in these decisions, right? We're not just going to do the things that are easiest or make the most financial sense. But what is it that the Lord wants?
And right.
Not really knowing what these situations are going to be, but making sure that even if they're not ideal, the Lord is still going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like, I know I had this big fear that, you know, I was going to die one day and get to heaven and God be like, you idiot. You should have been a doctor. Like, why did you do that? You should have gone to med school. You were going to cure cancer, all these things. And I'm like, oh no, like I failed. And as if like, I don't know, like I feel like sometimes in marriage, we're trying to decide like what the right thing to do is, right? Like God is behind one of two doors, you know, and which is the thing we're supposed to choose. And man, if we choose wrongly, well, then God's not going to be there. And we're going to have to figure this out without him. And it's like, God isn't behind either door.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's right next to you, right?
Oh,
like,
that's so true.
Whether there's a right choice or a wrong choice is kind of irrelevant. Like, the Lord is going to walk with you through whatever door that you choose.
Yeah.
Whether you choose, he wants you to work, he doesn't want you to work, to stay home or not stay home. Regardless of what the Lord's will is, he's still going to be with you. He's still going to give you the grace you need, even if you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Even if you make the bad decision, he's still going to offer you that grace anyway.
Yeah.
And to kind of rest in that fact of the Lord is not going to abandon me.
Right.
Right. We might make our lives a little bit more difficult based on what we choose, but he is still going to give me the grace to make this holy life possible. And
very
to really
true.
Kind of just not put all that pressure of like, we have to get this, all these sequences of decisions right, or it's going to go really badly.
Yeah.
You know, like the Lord is going to be with us no matter what we choose.
For sure. And he'll give you the grace to make a better decision the next time, mm-hmm. if you do make a poor choice, and just knowing that there are a lot of decisions you're going to have to make in your life and in your marriage. And not everything has to ride on every single one of them. So.
God is like Google Maps, right? You exit when you're not supposed to. He's going to recalculate and say, if possible,
reroute.
Make a U-turn.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to be like, all right, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Again, the road might be a little bit bumpier now.
Right.
But he's still going to be with you. He's still going to give you a way forward, right, if you're at least looking for it.
There's grace in everything, for sure. That's great. Any other advice or tidbits or stories or anything you want to share? Is there any other resource, like in addition to marriage prep or for that couples can do or individuals can do that you would recommend as they kind of form themselves into good, proper adults?
I think something that that's really important is actually the period of dating, that you're actually kind of, again, taking intentional steps towards marriage, right? Mm-hmm. And there are actually two really great programs I recommend for dating couples. One is called Next Step. Mm-hmm. It's out of the TOB Institute in Pennsylvania. Nice. But it's a course for couples that are dating that are discerning marriage and kind of what is the step we're prepared to take, and are you aware of what this step is going to mean? That program is really great. There's another program called Dating Well. I actually saw on the podcast there, the creator of that, Dr. Mario Sacasa, created that. That's a very good program.
He's awesome. Yeah, really good resources.
So those two are really great. So not just waiting until engagement to discern marriage, actually taking steps now. The last thing I would say, my current soapbox, at least for my wife and I, is really the encouragement to married couples, especially young married couples, to do marriage ministry, to recognize that there's a very easy temptation in marriage to kind of just turn inwards, to worry about our marriage, to worry about our kids, to get our ducks in a row, and to not necessarily be open to how the Lord might be calling you to love outside of your marriage, right? And I see a lot of my friends that have really great and holy marriages, and I'm begging them, please, you got to help with marriage prep. I want people to see how to do this, and you're doing it really well. And they're like, we just don't have time. And I'm like, it's so necessary.
Right.
We can't expect people to have holy marriages unless we show them how to have holy marriages.
Yeah.
So really true. The encouragement to even people with young kids or kind of in the trenches, like to really recognize what a gift it could be to the church and to your marriage to model that for others, to recognize that, again, this is a vocation, right? Like, it'd be ridiculous for someone that's discerning priesthood to never talk to a priest. Right. Or someone's already a priest to be like, you'll figure it out. You know, don't worry about it. Like, no, what a necessary, what a beautiful gift you have to give, right? Mm-hmm. It's really great when, you know, my parents, you know, and you know, older people that have been married for a long time help with marriage prep. Like, yes, they have a lot of wisdom. There's a lot of goodness there, but it you forget a lot of things. I've forgotten a lot of things in marriage already. And it's really helpful for someone that's going through it, you know, to like, this is kind of what this is the wisdom we're kind of gleaning right now that we're kind of suffering for. And this is the fruit of it. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And even for a marriage to be able to kind of put those things into words is such a gift. Yeah. If we're going to talk to an engaged couple about how to communicate, maybe we should listen to our own advice.
So
what a gift it can be to actually serve as a sponsor couple. I really wish just more people would kind of recognize that that is a vocation. Yeah. Right? That's a duty. That's, again, just because you get married doesn't mean you don't have to evangelize anymore.
Right.
Like recognizing, how are we evangelizing? How is our family evangelizing? Right. Yeah. Even bringing your kids into that, I think, is a very beautiful and powerful thing. So I'll get off my soapbox there, but to really encourage married couples to really try to make time to share their married life with others.
That's awesome. Great advice. Anything else you want to share with our listeners before we sign off?
No, I think I've talked enough. That's probably
awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kevin. That was great.
Thanks so much for having me. Always happy to come back on.
Awesome. If you enjoyed this episode of After Cana, share it with a friend, leave a review, or head to the Ferris Love website for more resources on building relationships and families of faith.